Hello and welcome to the China Business Brief, a podcast from the China-Britain Business Council where we discuss the latest news affecting anyone working in or with the world's second largest economy. I'm Joe Cash and this week I'm joined by Andrew Seaton, our CEO, for a recap of the year to date, now that China watchers are returning from their holidays and a 20th Party Congress is almost upon us. It's been a particularly tumultuous year in China, make no mistake, so it's going to be a bit of a challenge fitting everything in, but we're going to give it our best shot. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Joe, very good. Very good to be with you. Thank you.
For our listeners and those who aren't perhaps familiar with Andrew, he spent 35 years in the British Diplomatic Corps before joining CBBC, with most of that time spent working on UK relations with and policy towards China and Hong Kong, including stints as head of the China Department in the Foreign Office and as Her Majesty's Consul General to Hong Kong and Macau from 2008 to 2012. So he's super knowledgeable about the country. So Andrew, no pressure, but to throw you in at the deep end, I suppose, like many long-term China watchers, you find yourself practically locked out of the country that you've spent so long analysing, given how difficult it is to come to and fro. What are some of the biggest changes concerning China that you have noticed from the outside looking in?
Thank you, Joe. Clearly that lack of ability to travel to China, that lack of ability to get a sense on the ground of what's going on has been a real impediment to understanding events over the past couple of years. But I think you don't need to have visited China to recognize that China's been through an exceptionally challenging 2 or 3 years on all sorts of different fronts. You know, we've seen the very rapidly changing geopolitics around China. Now, this is not something just in the past 2 or 3 years. You know, if you think back, the President Obama's pivot to Asia was, I think, very much in response to changing US perceptions about China's role in the region. So it's not a new development, but I think that the past couple of years have really highlighted some of those geopolitical divisions around China. The events this year with the Russian invasion of Ukraine have added a whole new element to that. With this sense in some Western policymakers that you're sort of with us or against us on this issue. Of course, if you look across the world, it's a much more complex picture than that. But in respect to the geopolitical narrative among some, among some Western countries, there is that sense. And I think that too has added another dimension to what were some already pretty difficult geopolitics around around China. I think secondly, you clearly had some very significant economic challenges that China has been facing, short-term and long-term. I mean, short-term, and I recommend to all viewers, to all listeners, to read Joe's excellent piece on what's going on in the Chinese real estate market. But there's been the property sector, there's been high and very, very rapidly rising unemployment. There's been the problems we've seen over maintaining levels of economic growth. So that's been a seriously challenging economic backdrop. And I think there are interesting longer term sort of structural changes going on in the Chinese economy, which are also presenting challenges. And then if that wasn't challenging enough, over all of that, you've had, of course, the overlay of COVID, which has had huge impacts on the Chinese economy, huge impacts on international trade and business flows, which I think probably has exacerbated some of those geopolitical tensions just because of the barriers it's put in way of the normal sorts of, a lot of the normal sort of state-to-state, government-to-government contact that one would normally have been seeing. And of course, within China, you've had the impact on the economy and on foreign trade of COVID-related lockdowns and so on. So even looking from the outside in, it seems to me to have been an exceptionally challenging 2-3 years for Chinese policymakers to navigate their way through, and also a navigating a difficult situation for Western policymakers to navigate their way through as well.
No, thanks, Andrew. And you're right, there is so much to unpack, and we're not going to manage it over the next 15 to 20 minutes because it's been a difficult year in China. And if you are trying to keep abreast of everything in the run-up to the Party Congress, well, thank you for mentioning my piece on real estate, but we do have an entire website full of policy analysis for you to get your teeth stuck into. Our focus channel, I do recommend you check it out, as the next couple of months are going to see China really be at the top of the agenda with the Party Congress, but also As the UK under its new government starts to, you know, find its feet in, with regards to a new foreign policy. And I don't want to speculate. I want to keep this episode focused on looking back. But as I mentioned in the intro briefly, you did used to be the head of the China Department in the Foreign Office. And I think one question that's come my way a lot is, considering that policymakers, similarly to business people, can't come out to China, and they're having to look at, you know, what is taking place through, I suppose, foreign media and, you know, speaking to those who make trips back, how hard is it for policymakers to develop coherent policy towards the country, given that they can't visit, even their colleagues in the country are struggling to get about, to meet with their Chinese interlocutors on a regular and reliable basis? And how does policy strategy in that regard get formed? Because there's been a lot of consternation over the last year about whether there's a China strategy, how that might affect business, how the government is viewing China. How does the actual mechanics of forming China policy based on what diplomats are seeing coming out of the country function?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, I think it would be wrong to draw from some of the commentary some idea that somehow, you know, British or Western policy making on China has ground to a halt. You know, I think that there are numerous channels of information which policymakers have got to draw on. You know, from the British government's perspective, we've got a big and excellent network, embassy, consulate general network on the ground. I think our embassy in China, in Beijing now, is, I think it's now our second biggest embassy after that in Washington, D.C. Some very, you know, experienced, knowledgeable people working in that diplomatic network, who I'm sure are providing, you know, absolutely top quality policy advice to policymakers in London. And policymakers in London, you know, the machinery is used to dealing with and taking account of various inputs into that policymaking process. So I don't think that, you know, as I said at the outset, I think it'd be wrong to suggest that somehow the whole sort of policymaking process isn't working properly. But I do think that lack of top level contact means that quite an important element is missing from the picture nonetheless. And it's probably been exacerbated by the quite rapid turnover of senior government ministers one had at the UK end because of political change here. But that lack of an ability easily to sit down face to face with senior Chinese counterparts, to get a sense of the thinking of those senior Chinese counterparts, to actually discuss with those Chinese counterparts common issues of interest, you know, whether those be issues on which the UK and China disagrees, or issues on which the UK and China agrees, or issues on which the UK and China have got a strong mutual interest in working together. The lack of that top level interface, I think, it's been an obvious element from the policy making process that's been missing. And I think it, you know, I mean, just from my own experience in the Foreign Office, you know, those top level meetings both have got a way of crystallizing thinking about policy, but also, you know, in politics as in business life, personal relationships count. You know, that sense of what your opposite number is thinking about, that sense of what your opposite number's priorities are, how they're dealing with you and so on, I think is an important part of the process. So I think that lack of top level contact has probably made some of those geopolitical tensions I referred to a bit earlier, I think it's probably contributed to those in a not helpful way. And I think secondly, I think the lack of visits in both directions, again, I wouldn't want to overstate it, but, you know, it is clearly not a positive that Chinese policymakers aren't able to come to Europe, come to the UK, that senior UK and European and American policymakers aren't able to go to China. As you know, Joe, you know, it's anecdotal, it's impressionistic, but these things do count in terms of constructing an overall view of what's going on in a country, you know, what people's lives are like, is there that sense of buzz on the streets and so on. So I think because of COVID, as I said in my answer to my first question, I think that COVID and the restrictions that that's imposed has inevitably had an impact on those sorts of exchanges. And I think it's hard not to see that as an unfortunate impact, which I think has probably not helped. I may have contributed to some of the tensions that we've been seeing.
A lot of what we've spoken about today so far have been COVID restrictions, and much of that has been in place, supposedly because looking forward to next month, we have a 20th Party Congress, and when President Xi is seeking a third unprecedented term as General Secretary, and analysts are already suggesting that that is probably on the cards, given that he's travelling to Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan this week, potentially even for a meeting, we hope, with new Prime Minister Liz Truss at the G20. But do you think, now that we, with the whole point of this episode has been to set up our listeners so that they're ready for Party Congress and they're up to speed of everything they need to know, do you think that the third term and the greater kind of sense of stability that Chinese media, at least, has been suggesting about President Xi and being reappointed General Secretary will bring greater security and stability to international business now that he's traveling? And is that going to result in borders opening up?
Well, let's look at the third. Let's look at the Party Congress. I mean, you see the same information I do, Joe, about the expectation around presidency, standing for being granted a third term, and I've got nothing to sort of second guess that analysis that we're seeing from all sorts of analysts and the narrative within China. I think it seems to me, however, it's going to be quite an interesting, quite an interesting Congress in a different respect. If you think back to the last Party Congress in 2017, the backdrop to that was a very, very different one. I think 2017, China must have been growing, I don't have the figure in my head, but probably 6-7% that period. It had come through a period when it had been seen as a very, very positive factor in helping the global economy recover from the global financial crisis. I thought that was a very important step, actually, in China sort of demonstrating its economic weight in the global economy. So if the domestic economy was going well, while geopolitical tensions were there in the background, they certainly were not being articulated in as pointed and as sharp a way as they're being articulated now. Domestically in China, as I said, the economy was growing stronger. There was a sense of China moving on to a slightly different economic model. This being the future project, dual circulation, more emphasis on the domestic Chinese economy, and so on. And so the last Party Congress is very much, in a sense, building on and looking back to a period of positive developments, a positive background, and so on. I think that this Party Congress is going to be, for the reasons I said at the outset, very difficult, very different. The backdrop leading up to that. And nobody can blame anybody for the outbreak of COVID, and I'm not attaching any blame here, but it's just a fact that even within China, the backdrop leading up to that Congress is going to be very, very different from what had been the case in 2017. I think secondly, and here this is just just me speculating, but I think that what it means is that where certainly a lot of external interest is going to be in the Congress is what, if anything, it says about the future direction of travel, of policy and strategy. The interest is not going to be in the backward looking what's been achieved over the past 5 years since the last Congress, which in a sense is part of the backdrop to President Xi's third term. But I think from out externally, for all the reasons I've been saying, I think there's going to be a real interest in what new thinking, if any, emerges about, in a sense, the next 5 years. There's going to be a lot of interest in any new thinking that emerges about the economic direction, any new thinking that emerges about some of the other big problems that China is facing. I think China is it's been well publicized, but some of the demographic issues that China is facing as well. So I think that's from an external observer's point of view, and certainly from my selfish point of view. I think that anything that emerges from the Congress in respect to those indications about future changes of policy, direction of policy, whatever, there's going to be a lot of interest in that. And that's going to be true for business as well. you know, as I said, business on the whole, you know, responds very, very pragmatically to whatever situation it finds itself in and tries to work its way through that in the best interest of business. And they may not like certain policy developments, or they may like them, but, you know, businesses have to sort of work their way through them.
You know, with an article like that, you've just booked yourself into our event post you know, looking forward. So we'll have to have you either back for CB Insights or for another podcast in a couple of weeks' time.
Well, that's for analysis of the Party Congress, Joe. I've been entirely in your hands, as you know.
But Andrew, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. It's been great to tap into your long knowledge on the country, and I hope the listeners, you know, feel that they're now up to date and ready to go.
Thanks, Jackie. Good to talk.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with another one. Bye-bye. China Business Brief is a podcast brought to you by the China Britain Business Council. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you're subscribed. To find out more about our other events and activities, do check out our website at www.cbbc.org.